But as regards your doubts, we have sufficient funds to counter the Valorums and guarantee your victory." He fixed Tarkin with a gimlet stare. "Perhaps you and I could serve each other, as well as the Republic, by taking Valorum down a notch." His shoulders heaved in a shrug of uncertainty. "With the backing of your family, you may not even need our help. But rest assured that we will bolster you if necessary." Palpatine quirked a sly smile.
"You will be Iriadu's finest leader, Wilhuff."
"Thank you, Sheev,"
Tarkin said, with obvious sincerity, and using Palpatine's given name.
"I will do my best for my homeworld, and for the Republic, in any manner you deem fit."
Palpatine's words about Naboo and Iriadu turned out to be prophetic. After the Naboo crisis and Palpatine's election as Supreme Chancellor, many of Tarkin's former judicial peers would pin their hopes on Palpatine to keep the Republic from splintering. But the separatist movement grew only stronger, and Tarkin and others were forced to accept that Palpatine, for all his talents, had come to power too late. Social injustices and trade inequities prompted hundreds of star systems to secede from the Republic, and local skirmishes became the norm. And then came war, a war that soon raged across the galaxy. Owing to its strategic location in the Outer Rim and its geopolitical alliances, Iriadu found itself in a thorny situation with regard to the Republic and the Separatists. Perhaps Governor Tarkin, too, should have found himself in a quandary. But in fact, there was never a question as to whose ambitions he was ultimately going to serve. Dawn the following morning, Tarkin went to the palace landing field to ready the Carrion Spike for the voyage to Makana, only to find Vader and a contingent of stormtroopers already on the scene. Unencumbered by helmets or armor, most of the body-suited soldiers were engaged in overseeing the transfer of a featureless black sphere from a Victory-class Star Destroyer into one of the larger of the Carrion Spike's cargo holds. Some 3 meters in diameter, the sphere was flattened on the bottom, and evidently made to nestle in a hexagonal base that was also being lifted toward the corvette. Vader was pacing beneath the repulsor lift cranes in what was either agitation or concern, when the stormtrooper operating the equipment accidentally allowed the flattened sphere to bang against the edge of the cargo hold's retracted hatch. Vader stamped forward with his gloved hands clenched.
"I warned you to be careful,"
he shouted up at the trooper. "My apologies, Lord Vader. Wind shear from..."
"Excuses won't suffice, Sergeant Crest,"
Vader cut him off.
"Perhaps you are aging too quickly to remain on active duty."
Tarkin couldn't make sense of the remark until he realized that Crest's was a face he had seen countless times during the war. The face of an original Kamino clone trooper. The bareheaded others comprising Vader's squad were human regulars who had enlisted after the war.
"It won't happen again, Lord Vader," Crest said.
"For your sake, it won't,"
Vader warned. Tarkin turned his gaze from Vader to the dangling black sphere, unsure about just what he was looking at. A weapon? A laboratory? A personal toilet? A hyperbaric chamber? Some merger of the three? Had Vader become reliant on the sphere in the same way he was on the transpirator and helmet? Perhaps the chamber was nothing more than a private space in which he could temporarily free himself from the confines of the suit. Whatever the sphere was, it lacked a proper hatch, though 2 longitudinal seams appeared to indicate that the device was capable of parting. Tarkin glanced at Vader again, gauntleted fists on his hips, black cloak snapping in the wind, whipped up by departing warships, the morning light reflecting off the top of his glossy, flaring helmet. He was being as short with his men as Tarkin had been with his during the jump to Coruscant. Worse, Vader was clearly as irritated as Tarkin was about having been tasked to head for Makana. Vader seemed to regain his composure as the sphere and its platform were successfully lowered into the cargo hold. A trio of stormtroopers was already uncoiling cables with which to link the device to the Carrion Spike's power plant. Passing close to Tarkin on his way to the ship's boarding ramp, Vader paused to say,
"This shouldn't take a moment, Governor. Then we can be on our way."
Tarkin nodded. "Take as long as you need, Lord Vader. Narkana isn't going anywhere." Vader stared at him before marching off.
That look again, Tarkin thought. Or at least that suggestion of a look that always made him feel as if Vader knew him from some previous life.
"We no longer speak of the Jedi,"
Mos Amida had said when they had watched Vader issue his warnings to members of Coruscant's underworld. It struck Tarkin now that the Shakrian's attitude wasn't one that was confined to the Emperor's court. In the 5 short years since the Order had been eradicated, Jedi Masters, Jedi Knights, and Jedi Padawans wiped out by the very clone troopers they had commanded and fought beside, the Jedi already seemed a distant memory. Despite their refusal to come to Iriadu's aid against pirates, Tarkin had respected the Jedi as peacekeepers, but as generals they had proven failures. The Jedi Master with whom he had served most closely during the Clone Wars was Evan Peel, to whom Tarkin's cruiser had been assigned. Brusque and bellicose, the Lannik excelled in lightsaber combat, seeming to have integrated every possible fighting style, but he, too, had his flaws as a strategist. If Peel had deferred to Tarkin during their mission to investigate a hyperlane shortcut into Separatist-held space, they might have avoided capture and imprisonment, and perhaps the Lannik would have survived at least until the end of the war. The Force had endowed the Jedi with wondrous powers, but their biggest failing was in not having used the Force in all ways possible to bring the war to a quick end. By remaining faithful to their ethical code, they had allowed the war to drag on and spiral downward into a meaningless bloodbath. The conflict's sudden conclusion and the Order's decision to depose Supreme Chancellor Palpatine had taken